Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up on a farm in Vail, Oregon, a small rural community near the Idaho state line. An All-American football player in college, he played 11 seasons for the San Francisco 49ers and was considered to be one of the best outside linebackers of his era. He was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2000, and though a quiet man, his nickname was the Intimidator. His name? Dave Wilcox. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Our guest is the Hall of Fame San Francisco linebacker, the legendary Dave Wilcox. Dave, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood, growing up on the farm, and your mom and your dad?
Well, I don't know where to start. My parents moved out from Oklahoma in 1936 to homesteaded a place in out of Vail, Oregon. Actually, it's Willow Creek. It's about 10 miles out of town. It's right on the Oregon-Idaho border. The Oregon Trail crossed the Snake River about 6 or 8 miles from my home where I grew up on the farm. And so anyhow, there was 8 members of my family, 8 kids. There was 4 Okies, as we call them, and then there was 4 of us who was born in Oregon. And the 4 Okies and my mom and dad, and I think there were 6 or 8 other families, moved out to Oregon because they had started an irrigation program in western or eastern Oregon, and they had homesteaded a place. They got there in October, and eastern Oregon sometimes can get kind of cold. Well, as a matter of fact, we just had a gathering of my family, and there was talk about how they lived in the shack and burnt sagebrush to stay warm when it was 25 below zero. So, anyhow, I milked cows and stacked bales, and never had in the summertime back when I was growing up. Actually, I'll back up a little bit because the grade school we went to was in Willow Creek. It was 2 miles away from our farm there, and then the high school was 10 miles. But in my grade school, there was 4 rooms. Had 2 classes in each room, and my 8th grade class was 8. The principal was also the bus driver and janitor, I think. We were just happier at everything. Nobody had anything where we lived. All the families were the same, and, you know, it was just kind of hardworking people.
Dave, what's the biggest thing you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Well, I guess, I don't know, honesty nobody's going to give you anything, and you're not really owed anything. You need to work for it, I guess. Both of them. My mom, actually, what a tough job she had. They left Oklahoma in the Depression and the Dust Bowl, and where they lived out there, they had all this gooey black stuff that come out, and they couldn't grow anything, so that's the reason they left to go to Oregon. I guess it turned out to be oil and gas wells, but anyhow, she was a hard-working lady and had a tough life. I can imagine, raising the 8 kids in a, this is a grapes of wrath thing. And my dad was kind of the same way. They came out in 1936, and I was a sophomore in high school in 1958, and that's when we got our first indoor bathroom. So,
speaking of that same year as a sophomore, let's go back to a Friday night in February, your sophomore year in high school.
Oh, yes. It was a basketball. We played basketball, and I forget the team we played, but I was rode home with this guy. I had a car. I remember I said the high school was about 10 miles from town, and David Kendall, who was a neighbor. I don't know if it's his car or who it was, but I was a sophomore, so I must have been like 15. And one of my other buddies got a driver's license that day, so he lived farther up the road. He wanted me to ride with him on the way home, so what I did, but we come about 2 or 3 miles from where I live out in the country, and there's a wreck on the highway, and there's the car that I was supposed to be in. There was 3 people killed, 2 of my buddies in that car, and then someone else in the other car, and somebody must have been looking out for me because I happened to ride in a different car that day.
And how did that change your life?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think about that. Every time I drive by that spot, I can remember seeing the people laying on the side of the road and all that. So, you know, I guess you're kind of lucky to be where we are, and anything that happens, you know, things are always worse somewhere else, I guess.
You played football, basketball, and baseball in high school, and then you went to Boise Junior College, which is now Boise State, for 2 years, and then 2 years at Oregon, where you played football. Talk about your college football career.
Well, I have a whole bunch of older brothers, and a brother just older than myself played with the Philadelphia Eagles in 1960 when they won the championship. But he had gone from high school, he's 4 years older than I am, he had gone from high school to the University of Oregon one term and then turned around and came back to Boise Junior College, stayed there 1 year and went back to Oregon. And he was saying, going from Willow Creek Vale, Oregon, to Eugene, Oregon, which at that time was probably 35,000 to 40,000 people, was a major jump in life. So he kind of helped me along. So the reason I went to the Boise Junior College was kind of probably because of what he had gone through. And then the reason I went to the University of Oregon was a guy named Lynn Casanova, who was a good friend with a guy named Lyle Smith, who was my coach at Boise Junior College and a lot of other coaches. And by the way, he celebrated his 95th birthday last week, and I talked to him. But anyhow, and I think there was Tommy Prothrow, who coached at Oregon State, had recruited me also. But Tommy smoked in our house in Vail. My parents didn't like that, even though he was, I think, from Tennessee. So that's the reason I went to Oregon. Then we had some great athletes at the University of Oregon. At that time, we also weren't in the Pac-10 or they didn't have a Pac anything. It had broken up. But the first time I went to, well, on Boise, I think we lost 2 or 3 games in 2 years. I hadn't been used in high school. We lost 2 games in 4 years. Once when I was a freshman, we finished fourth in the state. Won the state championship twice my sophomore and junior year. My senior year, we got beat in a final game. And then I went to Boise and we won a couple games, or lost a couple games. And then I go to Oregon in 1961 season, I believe it was, or 62 season, excuse me. And we open with Texas in Austin. And I think we got beat like 17 to 14. I think they were like the national champs or really high up the year before. And we also, when I was at Oregon, we played Ohio State back there, played Air Force Academy, dedicated their stadium, played Penn State, played West Virginia back there. I mean, a whole bunch of teams that I don't know why our coach must have been mad at us for scheduling all these good teams, but what a great time. And then I happened to play with a guy who was a pretty good athlete, a guy named Mel Renfro, who was a Hall of Famer, played with the Cowboys for I think 13 years, and what a great athlete. He went to high school in Portland the same time I was going to high school in Vail. We never played each other in high school because they were a lot bigger school. So
we're talking to Dave Wilcox, who's known as the Intimidator, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dave Wilcox, the legendary outside linebacker for the 49ers in the 60s and early 70s. Dave, God brings us angels every once in a while in our life. And your coach at Oregon was an angel to you, Len Casanova. What did you learn from him?
Well, one is that you never wanted to get in trouble because whatever you did, you had to go see him. And that was never a pleasant experience. If he calls you in the office, you never wanted to get called in his office. But he was a man that grew up in northwestern California, a little farming community. And, I mean, he was a hardworking guy. And my parents really liked him. I got to jumble around here, but there was a story after I got through playing with 49ers. He married a lady from Payette, Idaho, which was just across the border. And he came over, and this was about my second year in San Francisco. It was in August or late July. And he went, stopped and visited my parents and a couple of other parents that their kids had gone to Oregon and played football. And he didn't have to do that. But anyhow, my dad was going to help Kaz out and give him some fresh corn. So he went and got a couple of sacks, burlap sacks, and filled them full of corn. And Kaz had a Cadillac. And it's about a 7 or 8 hour trip back to Eugene. So he wanted to make sure the corn wouldn't spoil. So put the sacks of corn in Kaz's Cadillac trunk, got a bucket and dipped the water out of the ditch and threw it all over the corn in the trunk and make sure it wasn't stout. But anyhow, Kaz was just, he was kind of a father figure. We still talk about him. He passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, and he was 97, I believe. But he was, had gone through the war and done all those things, and, you know, was just a gentleman. I mean, back then, I mean, him and Rip Engel and Woody Hayes. I don't know, what do you think about Woody? But there's a bunch of those guys that were kind of the same era and kind of the same makeup. But he was definitely, I mean, people, like I said, still talk about Kaz and, you know, some of my buddies and friends and stuff. But he was just the class of the earth.
In 1964, you leave Oregon and you're drafted by the San Francisco 49ers and then the Houston Oilers in the AFL. You go with the 49ers. Dave Wilcox, why the 49ers?
Well, there was a guy named Franklin Muley who owned the Warriors, San Francisco Warriors at the time, basketball team, and he was also part owner of the 49ers, had gone to University of Oregon back in the early 50s, late 40s. And him and a guy named Red Hickey came up to Eugene for the draft. The draft was in December at that time, and they grabbed Mel Renfro and myself and took us down to this hotel and bought us dinner. What they were doing is keeping us away from the American Football League. Anyhow, Mel got tired of sitting around. He took off and went home, and I didn't know, have anything to do, I guess. I stayed there, and I got drafted with the 49ers and went into Kaz had told me don't do anything until I talked to him. So I went in and talked to him, and there was no agents at that time and stuff. So the next day, and I said, well, what do I need to do here? And he said, well, if you talk to Houston had called. I was staying in the dorm, and they'd called and left me a message that they had drafted me in the sixth round. We had pay phones there in the dorm, and I didn't have any money to call them back. So I think Kaz called him and told him, but he says, you know, he was from the Bay Area. He coached at Santa Clara in the Bay Area in San Francisco. So he said, you need to sign with San Francisco. I said, okay, that's good enough for me. So that's how I did it.
Speaking of San Francisco, it's a unique city in America. What makes it so special?
Oh, I don't know. There was a lot going on in the 60s and 70s there, and kind of some of the unique things. I remember I got Matt Hazeltine, who was a linebacker when I got to San Francisco. He was the other outside linebacker. And we'd stay in a downtown hotel, I forget the name of it right now, on Saturday night before the game, and we'd played in Kezar Stadium, which was at the end of Golden Gate Park, and at the end of Haight, Ashbury District. And so we get up Sunday morning and have our pregame meal and leave the hotel and drive to the stadium. We'd drive down Haight Street, and this was when all the hippie thing was going on. And it was quite a scene, I guess. I don't know if that was entertainment or we were just stupid or what it was, but it was something. And then San Francisco in the fall usually is the best weather, really nice weather and stuff. And Kezar Stadium was an old classic stadium. The Seagulls used to move in the late in the game. I guess it churned up the worms or something. I'm not sure.
Who was the best player, Dave Wilcox, you ever played against?
I don't know. There's about 500 of them. They were all good. But the one guy that we kind of helped, there was some unique things that happened in games that I played, but the one with Gale Sayers, this young guy that came to I think he's the Kansas Comet or something like that was his nickname at college. But we played the Bears twice a year, and he came out to San Francisco and scored 4 touchdowns in a game. I don't remember who won the game. And then that was like in September, and then in early middle of December, we go back to the Wrigley Field, is where we played the Bears, and in a rainy, muddy, crummy day, Gale Sayers scored 6 touchdowns. I think it was in 3 quarters, and actually I kind of feel sorry for him because he probably got so tired they ran out of oxygen. If he'd have played the 4th quarter, he might have scored 6 more. I mean, but he was the most incredible athlete that we played against. That was really unique. And then there was another game in San Francisco where a guy named Jim Marshall, Carl Ellard picked up a fumble for the Vikings and scored a touchdown earlier in the game against us, and then Jim Marshall picked up, and I guess he thought he was going to run farther than Carl did. Well, he did, but he ran the wrong way, and he ran it in, gave us a safety running the wrong way. So there's been some unique things happen there.
We're talking to Dave Wilcox. When we'll come back, we're going to ask him about 2 other special Hall of Famers. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Dave Wilcox, the legendary San Francisco 49er outside linebacker who played 11 years and only missed 1 game. Dave, a lot of people say that the greatest defensive player of all time was the Bears' Dick Butkus. What made Butkus so special?
Well, I tell you what, I never played against him. I was always a defensive guy and played on the same side. But if you watched him play, it was very intense. And I could just imagine some center and a quarterback looking across the line and seeing Dick. He's probably got slobbered down his shirt and stuff. But he was really, the Bears team at that time, well, Gale Sayers on offense at time for the Bears, but they didn't necessarily have a lot of other, good players. There was a lot of players that played there, but Dick was kind of their defensive guy, and he seems to make all the plays. I mean, whether it was interceptions or picked up fumbles or all that stuff, but he was, and he was a big guy. It was about 235, 240, I think, and could run, and was real, just had a knack for being in the right spot at the right time.
Another guy that we recently lost, a legendary man, a gentle giant, Merlin Olsen. Once I asked him to write his philosophy of life for me, and this is what he wrote. "I've always tried to do things as well as I possibly could, to treat people fairly, honestly, and with respect, and to give of myself to make a positive difference in the lives of others." And he did that in a Hall of Fame way. Talk about Merlin Olsen.
Well, yeah, I met Merlin, actually, I think it was in 1961. I was in junior college at Boise. Went to Logan, Utah to visit Utah State. John Ralston was a coach, and I was being recruited down there. And met Merlin at that time, and you know, he was there was a guy named Clark Miller who played with the 49ers. They were All-American players at Utah State. But anyhow, Merlin went on, and I think he was a player rep at one time, or maybe not, but he went to some meetings and stuff. But I played in some Pro Bowls with him and knew him a little bit. But the thing that I was in meetings, and where Merlin always had a way of calming things down and having people sit down and discuss things without yelling at each other or punching each other. And I thought that was really a unique trait for the man. I mean, I had a great deal of respect for Merlin, and you know, he was a heck of a player, that's for sure. But as a person, I mean, he was always calm. Never seemed to have great highs and lows. It just kind of seemed to always be at a high level, I'll put it.
Coaches, they've helped a lot of young people. What separates a great coach from a good coach, Dave Wilcox?
Well, I don't know about that. I just happen to be, I guess, lucky or fortunate or whatever the word is, that the coaches that I had starting in high school and junior college and the University of Oregon and San Francisco were all, you know, hardworking guys. And I had great fundamentals as a player. And I think that started with my – I never played – in where I grew up in high school and all that, they never had, like, junior high football. I started playing football when I was a freshman in high school. But I had great coaches and fundamentals. And then there was – when I was at Boise, I had Coach Lyle Smith, but I worked with a guy named Ray Lewis who taught us a lot of fundamentals. And I'm talking about where you put your feet and what foot you step with and why you did that. And then I went to University of Oregon, kind of had the same thing, and then in San Francisco, kind of the same thing. So I think the good coaches or the great coaches – start with basic stuff, like this is a football, and these are your feet. And the reason I keep talking about feet is because I always thought that was probably your most important thing that you did, because you can't do anything unless you move your feet right. You can't run very fast, or you can't get there. But as you go up from high school to college, junior high to college, to the big universities, to the pros, the level of competition gets better, and so it's the little things that help you win games. It's not because you can outrun light and jump over big buildings. It's how you can get from point A to point B faster than the other guy. And some guys could run, like I said, run fast and do all this stuff, but they can't get there. And it's a fundamental thing.
Dave Wilcox, how do you explain America's total love affair with football?
I don't know. It has sure grown into a heck of a game, whether it's high school and colleges and stuff. I think maybe the one of the kids get to go out and you don't necessarily get in trouble if you run into each other or hit one another. Now, I don't think you should punch each other in the nose, but I think a lot of people, you know, would love to be able to do that, and they can't. So maybe they're, you know, living their fantasies through other people or something. I don't know, but it is sure growing. And with the, you know, the media thing, and our television and all the things that go on today, you know, everybody can be part of it.
What does football teach us about life?
Well, I don't know. I know one thing, that you never do anything by yourself. And matter of fact, Jim Tunney writes a thing I just got this morning, and he talks about that. And, even though I always thought maybe the most important guy on the football team is a center. And the guy said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, if he doesn't snap the ball, nothing happens. And the quarterback's not going to be able to throw it to anybody unless the linemen block, right? And the guys that can't catch it or don't catch it, unless the quarterback has time to throw the damn ball. So if you're an offensive player, you better take care of the center and the lineman. And defensively, it's kind of the same way. The linemen, those are the guys that do all the work, and they're probably the least paid. But I know that they were the most important guys on the team. And it is a team sport. It's not a, if you want to be an individual, go play golf or tennis or something, I guess. I don't know. But I know one thing, that you can't play it by yourself, although some of the guys today seem to think that, I think.
You've said many times, and I quote, "Learning is in the losing." What do you mean by that?
Well, I guess the thing is that whatever you did, you want to learn from that and correct the mistake so you don't do it again. it's not a lot of fun, but there again, there's somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose, and you don't go out to lose, I don't think, but they've got to give the other guys credit.
Coach Rick Forzano lives here. He coached Roger Staubach at the Naval Academy. He coached the Lions. He gave Lou Holtz his first college coaching job. A fantastic guy.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him recently about you, and he said, "I've always admired Dave Wilcox because he's been always so grateful and so positive." A lot of people lose the gratefulness as they get successful. Talk about staying grateful.
Well, it kind of goes back to you don't do this by yourself. I just happen to be in the right spot at the right time, I guess. I don't know. And you have to be a little lucky. I'm sure you have to have some skills. But along the way, maybe if I lived in some other place and didn't do what I got to do, I might have ended up being where I was. I mean, I don't know. I don't spend a lot of time reflecting on that, but I'm just so lucky to be able to get to do what we did. I know we talk about this every once in a while, some of my old buddies, that there's a lot of guys or a lot of people would love to got to do what we've been through. And you can't explain it to other people, I guess, but the camaraderie of a team and all of that, it's something that it's in the clubhouse or the locker room. And no matter how hard you try, if you're an outsider, you can't be part of that.
We're talking to Dave Wilcox, and I'm Jack Rasulin, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dave Wilcox, who was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2000. And that was 26 years after he retired. Dave, what was it like finally reaching the ultimate in football? You get elected to the Football Hall of Fame.
I never really sat down and thought about this a lot. Never said I hope I get there this year. Never did that because I thought I did what I did and can't change that. And if you belong there, it would happen. If you didn't belong there, it won't happen. But to be associated with some of the greatest athletes of all time is really kind of unique. And there again, I'm very fortunate and very lucky to be part of that group. I'm sure there's other people that belong in there that are not there and all that, but I don't think about that.
Speaking of those athletes, on the Friday before the induction in August, there's a luncheon. They call it the Nitschke Luncheon for Hall of Famers only.
Uh-huh.
In that year 2000, when you walked in there and saw the Jimmy Browns and the Unitas and the Bart Stars and all these legendary people, what did you think?
I thought, what am I doing here? My goodness. I sat down at the table and Bill Walsh and Sid Gilman and Namath and Don Maynard and I believe Butkus was sitting at my table. I thought, God, you know, I milk cows and stack bales, Vail, Oregon, went to a grade school. My eighth grade class was eight. All of a sudden, I'm sitting here with some of the greatest athletes to ever play anything and some of the great minds, and I'm going, you know, I don't know what train I got on, but this is pretty nice.
Speaking of coming out of nowhere, one of your sons, Justin, was a coach at Boise State. He's now at Oregon. And Boise State was nothing for decades. And the last few years, they've just become this superpower. How did it happen?
Well, he's at the University of Tennessee now. He's the defensive coordinator at Tennessee, not Oregon. He went to school at the University of Oregon. Well, Boise's always been, this goes back to Coach Lyle Smith, who took over in the late 40s, early 50s, and was a junior college. He was my coach there, but they've always been a pretty good program. But Coach Peterson, the last, I think he'd been there 7 years, he coached at Oregon and then coached at Boise, and my son went over as an intern, went to Cal, came back. But anyhow, if you got to know Coach Peterson, he is a guy, I mean, I would think players will love him. He will be like my Lynn Cazenova, you know, 20, 30 years from now. The things that he does as a coach, and he puts up with no BS. You know, you be on time, you go to class, he knows some guys are going to screw up. That's just the way it is when they're 18, 20 years old. But there again, this is a team sport. I remember a couple of years ago, there was a kid that was their leading receiver the previous year. And he had done something, and Coach Peterson suspended him for the spring practice and said, now, if you'd straighten up, I don't know what it was, you'd be back on the team this coming fall. And he was. He played one game, screwed up again, and Coach Peterson said, I'm not kicking you out of school, but I told you you weren't going to be part of the team, but you need to come and do all the things, and we're going to give you one more shot. Well, he finally got clear what it was he wanted to do, but the type of players that they get at Boise, I asked my son, Justin, like, the guys that he coached at Boise, how many could play at Tennessee? He said, well, I got to break that down, physically or mentally. I said, well, physically. And he said, there's probably about two. I said, well, how about mentally? And he said, they could all play there because it is the mental part of the game, and that's where they win. Boise, you know, they do a lot of fake things and all this stuff, but they are really just a heck of a good team, well coached, and it is a team. It's not a individual thing there. So I'm guessing that's probably part of it.
Speaking of screwing up, late last season, Boise was 9-0, 10-0. You know, they were on the verge of being in the BCS championship, and at the end of the game, the field goal kicker misses a chip shot against Nevada. They lose the game. You know, huge. Dave, what would you tell that field goal kicker?
Well, you know, I know Jan Stinnerud. Jan, as a matter of fact, Jan said he thought about writing the kid a note. But at least, you know, he's out there and gave it his best shot. It didn't work out. But I'm going to go back to the team thing, and I think that's what Coach Peterson told him. I don't know, and I'm sure that was devastating for the young man. But it was a team game, and earlier in the second half, Boise's defense didn't play well. So, you know, they gave up some things. So they were part of the loss also. And this goes back to the team thing. It just stands out more because that was very crucial. I mean, this is win or lose the game on this one play. Well, there's four or five plays in the game that I think that win or lose it. But anyhow, this is at the end, and you know, it's more magnified, I guess. But anyhow, the young man, I don't know if he can go play in a different league or in the NFL or whatever, but yeah, Jan said he'd missed a field goal or something similar that way back, you know, 40 years ago, and he still remembers it. So I'm sure that, you know, and the kid didn't plan on doing that, of course, but things happen.
hard work for you, Dave Wilcox, has been instrumental in your life. And you told me recently, quote, Jack, we've made it so hard for kids to work today. Talk about the value of hard work.
Well, like I said earlier, if there had been child abuse when I was growing up, everybody had been in jail, I guess. I don't know. But the kids today, you know, we have all these laws that they can't work. And I'm not saying that, you know, there wasn't, you know, things going on. But I remember our kids, we lived out in the country. And when they were growing up, we have two boys, the coach and then our oldest son. And they had to go to the neighbors because they weren't, you know, they moved the irrigation pipe and done all that stuff. And they wanted some money. So they went to the neighbors and they picked green beans. And they put them in a sack, and kind of the kids got to know if you got paid by the pound. So if you had more weight, you'd make more money. And so they learned how to put rocks and clods and stuff in there to get more weight. But I'm sure that Mr. Hensley knew exactly what they were doing. But it was the idea of them working and stuff. So I don't think hard work has ever hurt anybody. And I think it gives you kind of a background on how to move on.
Last question. Dave, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, nothing's going to be given to you. And you need to work hard at things. And if you're trying to be an athlete or, I guess, basically anything you do, you should learn the fundamentals. I mean, you can't write a book unless you know how to read, right? Or write, and, you know, in football or basketball, whatever it is, you got to learn the fundamentals of the stuff. And you should start with fundamentals. There again, I think when I first started talking about this here 45 minutes ago, is fundamentally is where I think a lot of the great players come from. And that'd be true with anything you do.
Dave Wilcox, thanks a million for doing this. Great to be with you. God bless and stay healthy. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohome.